Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning, everyone, depending on where you are in the world. I think somebody forgot to tell Winter they're supposed to leave because it's snowing here really hard. And I have a message to Winter. You've worked so hard all year. It's time for you to take a vacation and let spring come. But anyway, this is going to be fun because I have the author of one of my favorite books here, Power Empire, Tom Clancy's. Mark Cameron is here, and I have to tell you, Mark, that there's about 20 people whose hands are sticking out at me as I'm looking at them, saying I want the book. They're not getting it. They have to buy it. Too bad.
So, good.
Well, I hope that Texas is okay, and I'm really glad they caught the guy that was blowing up Austin this morning.
Me too. I just read that.
Yeah, I just hope that they caught the right person, to be very honest. And I know that my friend, FBI agent Michael Tabman, is going to be doing a show, a radio show, on that this morning. And so when you created this novel, how did you create your plot line for Tom Clancy? Did you have a script or did you create it yourself? Because this one really, I read every Tom Clancy just about, but this one really kept me interested.
No, that's a good question. No, they... Tom Colgan, the editor that I deal with at Putnam, and I kind of bounced some ideas back and forth. And since this was my first one, and I wanted to talk about some things I was already familiar with. And so I looked back over a lot of the older Clancys, actually all of them, read all the early Clancys again, and some of them a couple of times. And you know, we talked about it. I wasn't given an assignment for what the plot would be, but Tom and I talked about some ideas, and I sent in, I don't know, I think altogether maybe four different synopsises with different tweaks and changes until we agreed on this one.
Well, this is great, because I always wondered how editors and how publishers, whatever, deal with it. You know, when I publish my book, it's just me figuring out what I want to say, and I just hope it works. Yeah, but I haven't gotten it yet. But I mean, I love Jack Ryan. I love The Hunt for Red
October. Oh, me too.
I love all of his books, but a couple of them, I just like looked at them and they sent me going, oh, do I have to really read this? This one I actually asked for. I don't ask for very many Tom Clancy. My cousin called me and said, would you please get Power Empire? She's such a pain. So she's getting this one because she's like sticking her hand out from wherever. So how did you create this plot? You have China. We're not going to get into too much of that. And we have the sex trafficking. The sex trafficking issue is amazing because about the last 10 books I've read have been dealing with this. Why is this issue coming up so often?
You know, it's something that I think social media has helped with. I'm often not a big fan of how engrossed we are with social media and things today. I think it takes up much too much of our time, but that is a very positive aspect of it, that we can communicate much more quickly. I mean, a good example is like Amber Alerts and cell phones. You know, those can go out very quickly, where used to it was a highway sign and, you know, police radio traffic. And now everybody, and where I'm at right now visiting family, we get an Amber Alert at least once a day over our cell phones. It just goes out. And so with human trafficking, it's when some group in Utah or California or, you know, some group combats it and does such a good job of combating it as they are here. You know, there's a group in the Rocky Mountains and also in California, and then here in Texas, the Texas Department of Public Safety and Derek Prestridge, who worked with some of my old cohort at the United States Marshal Service, it's heard about, and it's such a prevalent problem that it basically, I think the skin's been peeled back and everyone's able to see it. It's there. It's been there a long time. And I think it's just come to the forefront of our consciousness. But the poor people that are, they're dealing in, you know, the ones that are the victims of human trafficking, they've been being trafficked for a long time. And that's one of the things that Captain Prestridge was able to sort of quantify, was that you know, we make all these stops, we get all these drugs, we get all this illicit cash, and we stop all these drunk people. Why aren't we finding any trafficked kids? And once he was able to figure out what questions to ask and what questions to have the troopers to ask, they started getting them all the time.
That's just scary, because this happened from a routine traffic stop, and I'm reading Alison Brennan just wrote one, Breaking Point, that I just got out of there. A lot of times people just send me books and they go like, huh, this came here? yeah, it deals with a police officer that went undercover pretending to be a doctor, trying to find it, and it's like bone chilling. So we've got Jack Ryan, but to tell you the truth, I like Jack Ryan Jr. better. And I like the campus. I love Chavez. I love Clark. And I won't tell that scene at the pool, but that was really too much for words. So how did you create Jack and Jack Ryan and all the characters? Do you follow your own script for them? Did you change how they act? Because they're much better and stronger in this particular book than in the ones that other people have written with him, to be honest.
Well, you know, I appreciate that. I think because it's art, some people are going to like the previous books better. Some people might like these books better. And I what I tried to do is not change them at all. If somebody likes this book better, it may be because they like this particular plot better. And I think when I first got the call about writing a Jack Ryan, you know, Tom Clancy book, it came out of the blue. And Mark Graney, the guy that wrote the Seven Before Me, basically recommended me for the job. And he had been reading some of mine. I'm a big fan of his Gray Man series. And so I was really surprised by it. And so I had to really come up to speed quickly. And so now I'd read all the Jack Ryan, you know, all the Tom Clancy books already as they came out, but I hadn't read a couple of the later ones. So my wife and I in the winter, we flee from Alaska for a couple of months, and we have friends in the South Pacific, and so we stay on a little island there and kind of get away and unplug. And so we just took a bunch of books with us, and we just studied every one, took notes, kind of put ourselves through a Tom Clancy university of our own making, and really studied the characters and what moved them and compelled them and how they interacted. And you know, and I kind of, quote unquote, grew up with Clark and Chavez and Jack Ryan Sr., because I read Hunt for Red October when it came out in 1984. And so I felt like I knew the characters, but I needed to ingrain them more. And then some of the ones that other people created, Mark created Midas Jankowski and, you know, Adara Sherman and some of the other members of the campus. So I had to come up to a little better speed with them. And then I just plugged those characters as I believe Clancy envisioned them and Mark envisioned them and tried to make them honest. So I don't think I came up with new. I did create, I think, one new major character that's part of the campus that took Adara's place, the Lisanne Robertson character. And she's not major, but she's going to be a recurring character for a book or two. In any case, I tried to stay true. I think it would be impossible to imitate Tom Clancy's style or Mark Graney's style. I have to write my own style. You know, I try to make it a Clancy-esque book, but that was one of the agreements that Tom Colgan, the editor, and I had early on, was to write a Mark Cameron novel in the spirit of Tom Clancy.
That's tough, because, you know, it's hard when somebody has to review a book that's 800 pages. and lately that's what I've been getting, a whole bunch of books. There's another one inside that's like 800 pages, and I'm going like, you're torturing me. You could have written this in 300 pages. And I don't write negative reviews, and I try not to put spoilers in it, but I'll, you know, and I'm saying, what am I going to do to make this book sound as well as everybody else? But I have to tell you, because Right before the show, I'm looking at my phone, and I read your reviews on Kirkus and Publishers Weekly, and they said that you got high marks, that you're probably the best one that wrote a Tom Clancy book, to be honest. If you haven't read it, you should.
Well,
I read everything.
That's very. I normally shy away from my reviews because, like you say, it's art. Some people like purple. Some people don't like purple. Some people like blue or red or whatever. And so I just try to, plus by the, you know, with authors like me and Mark Graney and people that are writing a two books a year or two books every year in a few months, you're already, you know, I'm already a book and a half down the road by the time this one comes out. And so I love it and I enjoy the opportunity and the idea of writing, I'm already so engrossed in another plot or maybe even another plot that, you know, two books down, that I just can't expend the emotional energy to worry too much about what people are saying.
I wouldn't worry either. I learned a long time ago, but if you're writing something and you believe in it, that's all that really matters. It doesn't matter what other people think.
Yeah. Just try to be honest. Just try to be honest. And honestly, we're going to make mistakes. When you write an 800-page book, I got an email several years ago from a nuclear physicist who liked one of my Jericho Quinn story, one of my own series. He liked the book and he actually raved about it in the email, but then he pointed out that I got the half-life of plutonium wrong and I had transposed a couple of numbers and I was, I just said, you know what, I mea culpa. I'm sorry. I'm just really happy that a nuclear physicist is reading these kind of people killing spy novel, over the top novels. And
well, you know what?
So,
Stuart Woods does something at the end of his books that's really clever. If you find any grammar errors or any errors in my book, tell it to my editor. It's not my fault.
I wish I could say that.
So the other plot area, which we'll just touch on, but not too much, got a lot of people on my cell phone listening and thinking this is wonderful. I think there's going to be a lot of people listening after. I usually don't do a chat room because there are a lot of unusual people out there, and I find that it's easier to take questions on my Facebook wall. Yeah, only one incident where I was interviewing Jeffrey Wells for the Ivory Coast, and the book was phenomenal, and people just like, there was the silliest thing, and I said, if you don't like my show, disconnect, because I really don't care what you think. And then they just disappeared, and I make it private.
Right.
So the other areas, why is everybody writing about China and Russia? What is so fascinating about China? Every book, I know more about China and Russia than I ever did before, besides what's on the news that I don't listen to.
That's a really good question. I think writers have to, in order to stay relevant, we have to be able to see around corners a little bit of the future and try to be, I don't know if prescient is the right word, because I am not really trying to tell the future, especially with a Clancy book. Clancy was able to foresee certain things, and just by the way you read the news, you get inspired by it, to write certain stories. But what we do want to do is stay close to that the way things are heading. But if I'm trying to think of a way to say this that doesn't slam other writers, because some people really try to stay right with the news. A Tom Clancy novel is a completely different universe, even though it mirrors the way things are, basically who our enemies generally are, who our allies generally are. In a couple of his books before he passed away, Tom Clancy had us fighting a war with Japan. Now, it was because of rogue nationalists and things like that, and then we got back to being friends with Japan again. But it's okay to step outside the lines a little bit. And so my character, the president of China, and there's already been in the past a couple of, I don't know how far back they are, but of Mark Graney, Tom Clancy books, there's already been, one of the presidents of China has already died, and I won't spoil it in case people haven't read it, because it's worth reading. But it's not exactly like, because that hasn't happened. So we're not trying to reflect exact news, but just the ideas. So if you know, a certain President Volodin in one of Mark Graney's books happens to mirror Putin, then okay, that's okay. But certainly the way the news plays out will be a little bit, or probably will be a little bit different. But as far as China goes, in this one, I study quite a bit about Asia, and my son and I, my oldest son and I have quite a few talks about it. That's one of his areas of expertise. And so, you know, you play a lot of what if games. And honestly, I get, you want for your reader and even more, I think, for your own mind as an author, you want to change up the plots, and not every plot can be Middle Eastern terrorists.
Yeah.
And so you want to have we have other threats against our nation besides Middle Eastern terrorists. Now, that's not to downplay the real threat from terrorists everywhere, but some of the things that go on in other countries, including, and in this particular book, machinations of people within their own government affect us. And so it doesn't have to be a direct threat with somebody pointing a nuclear missile at us. It can be, although that is a threat, the infighting that destabilizes other governments also affects us. So that's what this, that's the premise I went with this one.
Well, you're lucky you have somebody to help you, because 2 weeks ago, on March 12th, I don't think I emailed you, maybe you didn't get it, I actually braved it and I spoke out for the very first, I never speak out on any issues. I did a show on Parkland because my family is there. My niece lost a whole bunch of friends that day, and her school was locked down the next day. So Alan Jacobson and I, and Michael Embry, and me, I was impressed with myself that day. We did a show on school safety plans, and how to protect schools, and what's next, and what was done that was wrong that day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I want to do a follow-up on it, too, because this is getting serious. There was another shooting yesterday in somewhere else. And it bothers me because I'm an educator. And I taught for 36 years in a tough school in the Bronx. And I'm little. And I just walked into the room and everybody got quiet. Nobody started with me. And I must have done a great job, because half my students tear me every single day to tell me they love me and they miss me. And I did a great job because they're succeeding. Of course, not everybody is going to succeed, but the 25 or 30 that I get every day make me feel like, you know, you did a good job. You did great. And it just bothers me that, you know, I know, as a matter of fact, yesterday was somebody's birthday, and she threw me heart. She said, meaning coming from you, it means more than everybody else, because you made a difference in my life. And I go like, at least I did something right. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. There was this as a routine traffic stop. So how does the campus, they get involved and they want to stop this, and they realize that this young girl hands them something that's going to help them, that leads them to somebody else. So how do they actually unravel something like this? Because that must be tough.
I think that's the beauty of a Tom Clancy novel, or in my opinion, any good novel, is the way it's woven together, especially any good novel has to, no matter whether it's a thriller or, you know, Western or a romance or whatever, it has to be woven together, and the more intricate but still plausible, the more interesting it is, and the way it makes you want to turn the page. And so our goal as novelists is to write in such a way that you're so worked up by the end of every page that you want to turn it and see what the next one is. And by the end of every chapter, there's no way that you can, you know, my favorite emails are emails from people that say that they missed, you know, sleep, and that they were so tired at work the next day because they stayed up reading a book. And that's really the goal, to write a book that's difficult to put down. And I think the way to do that, or at least a way to do that, is to weave these separate plot lines that come together in different ways. And you know, that's really the way things work. Very rarely, gosh, I don't know, unless you get a confession in the course of my career in law enforcement, it's rare that you have a real cut and dry kind of a whodunit, you know, and unless you have the smoking gun at the scene and it's tied up right within that first few hours, then it might take a break of that same person robbing another store down the road and getting, and then some good detective, you know, looks back on his or her notes and says, ah, this has some similarities, and, you know, puts two and two together and deduces, and or a witness comes forward way down the road. And so that's what I try to do in this one, was have these roads that seem different. I mean, how could a young Costa Rican girl forced into prostitution have anything to do with China? And that, I think that's the question that left unanswered for a few pages makes people want to continue reading. Oh my gosh, she's got something that's important to this. And now it's going to go from one person to the next and end up in the hands of the campus. And that's what, if I don't know what causes it, but if it, when I'm writing something, a synopsis, and I get kind of that feeling like, this is going to be, I kind of know when I'm going to like the storyline, because it surprises me, kind of that aha moment during the synopsis.
Well, I'll tell you, I've read other Tom Clancy books, to be honest, and I've been reading books since I'm three, seriously. And my mom used to make me, it's a tough fault that I'm doing this too. I take notes on everything. So if you ever looked at your book, I have notes, I have pages with dog ears, I have pages folded in, I circle, so that when I write the review, oh, I ask questions on the show, I know where I'm going to look to find my questions and everything.
Oh, sure.
And the last couple of ones, I read them and reviewed them, and I'm saying, like, I'm being tortured here. And sometimes when people write books for other authors, the plot line is so convoluted that I'm saying, wait a minute, let me get my graphic organizer out from teaching reading so I can figure out the plot, the main idea, and the details. And I'm going, like, if I have to do this one more time, I'm going to scream. I'm doing it with another book inside. But, yeah, so we've got what I don't understand is that these girls are sold, or their parents sell them, or they get picked up on the street, and they're used for money. Why do they put them on drugs, and why do they abuse them? That doesn't make sense. Why are you hurting your profit? And I want to smack these guys in the head.
Yeah, and the thing is the whole thing is abuse. I heard even if you treated them ostensibly, quote unquote, nice, they're still, I mean, the drugs control, and human beings are not like, you know, cattle or animals where they'll stay, you know, they're not going to stay locked up willingly unless they're somehow controlled, either by threat or, you know, physical violence or drugs or something like that. But I heard a vice officer say that all prostitution is rape. You just, you know, people just pay for it. No, very few people. There may be, I don't want to paint with a complete brush, because maybe there is somebody, some high-end escort out there that just says, no, I just enjoy doing this. But I certainly never met one. And the thing about prostitutes is they become very good sources for law enforcement, because they, in fact, kind of it's a sad situation, but kind of a funny story. My wife reads all my books and edits them for me, and, you know, goes over them, gives me notes and all of that. Before, she's like you, she was an educator for a number of years and very smart. I'm very lucky to have her in this, you know, to collaborate on these, finishing up these books. And she's reading one of my manuscripts several years ago, and laying on the couch reading, and I'm across the room writing on something else, and she lowers the page that she was reading, and she looks at me and she says, "How is it that you know so much about prostitutes?" And I think as a police officer, and then later on as a deputy United States Marshal, you learn that prostitutes know what's going on the street, and so they become one of your major sources of information. You know, what's going on here? What do you hear here? Or they oftentimes come to you and say, you know, this is going on. You got to stop it. And so I think I just tried to be real in these with these characters, and talking to Captain Prestridge with the Texas Department of Public Safety, my good friend Mike Burke, who's a psychologist with the Marshal Service that handles the sex offender program for tracking down unregistered sex offenders that the Marshal Service runs. And so, you know, I had lots of anecdotal evidence from other people and then my own experience dealing with them. And that's just the way it's done. It's human nature when you have someone in custody and, you know, and you're holding them to mistreat them, sadly. And when you already have the, you know, when it's all about the money, it could be that, and not all trafficked people are in the sex trade. Some of them are in the cleaning trade, you know, in the garment manufacturing trade. I think the sex trade is probably the biggest one, certainly the one that's in the news more and with children. You know, you can sell drugs one time, but you can sell a human being over and over and over again, even when they're hurt and sick. And so that's just the nature of the business, which makes it tragic. But you can't, as a police officer and also as a writer, I think you see what's tragic, but you also have to be honest and say, well, this is horrible, but I can't turn away. I have to focus on it and stop it, or at least bring it to light.
You know what's really scary is that, well, I worked in a tough school in the Bronx. I grew up in the South Bronx. And when I started to teach, we had a couple of boys in the sixth grade that were into selling drugs, and guess who figured it out? Oh, boys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know what possessed me to figure it out, but I figured it out. We caught them and we stopped them. But a few years later, I would see these girls coming home. I get to work at 6:30 in the morning because I came early to work with some children that had trouble reading on my time. And there were these young girls that were coming home, and there was a prostitution ring across the street from the school. That's where they lived. In this house, and it took a very long time before anybody realized, you know, you couldn't prove it. You just knew that they came ready to go home. They said, "Good morning, how are you?" And they'd go like, "Okay." The police knew they were there. It just took them a while to clean out the house. So, yeah, it does happen every single where. And I had one parent that I knew was a pimp. Yeah, he came in with this young girl, and I'm saying, "Is this your daughter?" He says, "No, it's my wife." I go, "Okay." He was about 40. She was about 12. And I didn't say anything. So we've got a character, Kelsey. Tell us about her. She's nasty. She's tough.
Yeah, she's tough. You know, that's the reality of law enforcement. When I first started in 1984, there were females in law enforcement, but not near as many as there are now. And the attitudes were a little, you know, starker lines of, you know, just not as accepted as much as they are now. And I've seen some and worked alongside some really tough people of both genders. And I wanted to make sure that, I could have made a male FBI agent, but it just seemed the natural thing. Plus, in crimes against children, especially these CAC task force and ICAC, the Internet Crimes Against Children, the CAC and ICAC task forces, women are often on those task forces because, honestly, I hate to make a sweeping judgment, but you're just tougher mentally when it comes to that. I think seeing the images, even though oftentimes women are painted as, and honestly are, you know, tear up when they see things, or they don't want to look at that sort of thing. When you get into law enforcement, if you put, and I have no statistics to back it up, just my observations, but if you put a man looking at these images of trafficked children on the internet all day long, it's going to affect him in such a way that makes him not able to move forward. Where a woman will see it, be, you know, a woman in this line of work will see it and move forward and kind of build a shell, if you will, kind of like a knacker on a pearl, and move forward and stay productive a little bit longer. And I'm certainly not trying to detract from the men involved, because everybody that I've met has done an incredible job. But I just see these women that are just tough in this, because and men and women who make it their personal mission. And I know a particular woman with the Anchorage Police Department that did this sort of investigation for a number of years, and sort of modeled the character a little bit after her, a little bit after other women that I've met, and a couple of other FBI agents that I know. And she was actually, I don't want to say easy to write, but certainly the character came from people that I really know. There are some really tough kick butt kind of women in law enforcement out there. And so there's nothing about Kelsey Callahan that's over the top or improbable. There are many women in law enforcement out there that are just that tough. Stomp their own snakes. You know, they don't need some other person, male or female, to come help them out too much. They do their own thing.
Well, her interviews were kind of tough. I said, yeah, I'm glad I'm not sitting in front of her. Oh, my God. And she interviewed one of the characters,
exactly.
And I'm going like, oh, my God, something's going to happen. So there are other players. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm tough. And, you know, like they say, she's little, and I speak my mind. I get in trouble a lot, but you know what? I don't care.
There you go.
If I want to know something, I'll ask a question, and my husband looks at me and says, you know, you're going to call another person to ask that? I said, I'm going to get the answer that I need to get, not the one I want to get, not what I want to hear. I need to get the right answer. So, I mean,
that's a good attitude.
Yeah, my mother always told me she'll speak for me, and now she says nobody's here. And, you know, you're lucky to have your wife. I had my sister. Used to edit my books, and she used to tell us, when she read my first book, my name is Bertha, she said, you sound like you were abused. I said, no, Mom liked you better than me. What can I tell you? And she looked and said, yeah, I've always been the good one. It made it seem as if my mom believed that if I didn't do an assignment perfectly, I had to write it over until I got it right. And if I didn't get 100 on a spelling test, which I would never think of not doing, I had to write the word 100 times, all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was tough, yeah. And you had to play by her rules, yeah.
There you go.
She, yeah, trust me. Yeah, I came down one morning improperly dressed. She sent me upstairs and called my boss and told her I was going to be late because she didn't like what I was wearing. And the principal said, you're my assistant. If mother didn't like it, then you're going home again. I was like, oh, my God, I'm in trouble. So you've got other members. You added two other guys in the campus, and they were kind of tough. But how did you create the scenes where they were trying to find this guy that was in charge of the ring? How did you create those things? Because I'm sitting there like heart stopping and saying, these scenes I could visualize, I could see them in the street hiding and no one seeing them. So how did you create that? Because that's good. And, of course, John Clark is my favorite person because he may be older, but he's not down and out.
That's true. I think that sometimes about myself. I'm not quite as old as him, but I'm certainly not young anymore. I'm not sure which scene you're talking about with him on the street. Is that it, the one in Texas where they're hunting? Or I try to touch on things that I experienced myself or you know, with my own law enforcement experience. And certainly it didn't mirror it exactly, but I've been on many surveillance operations and, you know, stakeouts, if you will, and followed people. And, you know, so I know what it's like to sit surveillance in a car and, you know, smell people passing gas and old Whataburger and Dairy Queen and Burger King sacks piled up in the floor and coffee cups everywhere. And, you know, you have to go to the bathroom all the time and you don't want to get out because your person you're watching may come out any moment. And there's a, unless you've really sat in there and done that or interviewed somebody, it's hard to, it's hard to understand what kind of feelings those really are. And so I'm fortunate that I was able to do some of that, and I tried to pass that along in this book. So where some books, some Clancy books have been really heavier on the military, this certainly, because it is a Clancy book, and my own series has a lot of military action in those books as well. But I also, this book in particular, and who knows what the future ones will be like, but this book in particular is heavy on law enforcement and the law enforcement skills that the intelligence community and intelligence organizations like the campus have to use of, you know, foot surveillance and vehicle surveillance and interrogation and things like that. So I tried to just plug my own personal knowledge in this book and hopefully give it some reality and verisimilitude of, you know, for my goal is that if I'm writing about surveillance, somebody that's actually done surveillance can read it and go, oh yeah, yeah, that's the way it's done. Or somebody that's actually done a pit maneuver on a car can say, oh yeah, that's the way pit maneuvers are done. Or somebody that does an interrogation say, wow, she's over the top, but hey, I've seen that happen. So that's my goal when I'm writing.
Well, you succeeded because there was only one book, and I've read over 5,000. Seriously? I counted my emails the other, my reviews the other day. Too many. And there was only one book that I review for Book Pleasures. I love Norm. And there was only one book that I got about 3 years ago, and I'm saying, this is the most biggest baloney I've ever read in my life. How could the chief of police of a town, I won't say where, claimed that he can't handle the case, so he got a retired detective and his wife to go into a hole to bring the body out and bring the bones. And I'm saying, I don't even care who did this. And it was the first time I said, there is no way that I'm going to review this book. And they don't like negative reviews. I said, I'm just going to write that this plot is implausible, and I give up. And I never missed the meaning of the book, and I'm going like, oh, my God. And he emailed the author, and I said, look, I'm really sorry, but I just refuse to do it. And I'm sure he's still writing somewhere. Yeah, that's the only time I've ever said I'm not doing this because I don't want to tell the guy that he can't write. And there was only one other one where the girl had 750 typos and 27 pages repeated. And I tried to tell her, you need to have it re-edited because your storyline isn't bad, but I'm not going to review your book. She says, well, why won't you give it 5 stars? What about 0? Don't you get? So, I will not write a negative review. If something doesn't get at least 3.5 to 4 stars, I'll just write a summary. But you introduced an interesting character because, you know, with your plot line and with the campus, you can go off in so many different directions. There are so many different things that they can explore.
Right.
Because, like the Middle East and Israel. And I just finished In Defense of Israel by Moshe Ahrens. I reviewed it, and I'm the only person that did. I'm the only one person reviewed it after me and said it's a very nice book. And, I'm the only one that actually read it, and I was hoping to interview with him, but I don't think he's going to do it. I think he's 93, and I don't think so. But you introduced a new character that I get a feeling you're going to bring back. Now, the guys from the campus, I don't want to say too much, they get in trouble, and that's what made it plausible. Because if things go too smoothly, then Fran falls asleep, and so, like, that's not going to happen.
That's right.
I mean, if the protagonist or the other ones don't have a problem and they don't get in some kind of danger or whatever, then it's like baloney. So tell us about Yuki and why you added her to the plot.
Well, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
No, and that's good. We don't want you to be. She's sort of a amalgamation of other people that I've met as well, and I've spent considerable amount of time. I told you one of my personal interests is Asia and Asian cultures and being in martial arts and things like that. I I spent a considerable amount of time in Japan, and I been over several times since I retired. And then our oldest son was stationed with the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. He was specialed in Japan for several years, and so my wife and I would go over to visit he and his wife and the grandchildren. And so I speak. I used to be fairly fluent, but now I certainly understand quite a bit, but I don't, after 30 years, it's hard to recall quickly enough to have a conversation. But after being over there for a week or two, I can get my language back a bit. But so I've met several people and then worked with in the Marshal Service. I was loaned several times to the State Department to do protective operations, especially during, well, you're in New York, the United Nations General Assembly, when all the dignitaries from other countries come in and meet at the UN. I was loaned to be on the protective detail for the Foreign Minister of Japan. So I was able to meet some of their security officers and things like that. And so I know a bit about the way that runs. And so I wanted to have a scene where President Ryan goes to the G20 in Tokyo, and I'd been in Tokyo doing some research on this, and the Yuki character just really kind of popped out at me. It was a natural progression. It added some not a lot, but a little bit of sexual tension to the mix with a few of the characters, and sort of a new way of looking at things, because not all intelligence agencies and organizations look at things the same way, and you can be a good person but still have allegiances, not necessarily to, the United States or the other country. You still be a good person, but we all care about the country that is our sovereign. So I kind of explored that a little bit.
My nephew just came back from Japan. He loved it. He sent me pictures. Because I
Oh, it's
explained to
great.
him that
It's
when you
a
go to
magical
a
country.
foreign country, he loved it. I got pictures on my cell phone that I saved from him and his girlfriend, and I said, "You know what? Just because you're in a foreign country, you need to text me every day or your mother just so that we know you're okay." I'm terrible. I did that with my nephew. He went with Birthright to Israel last year. I said, "Josh, oh, by the way, everybody, before I forget, Josh is being inducted into Beta, Gamma, Sigma, Beta, Sigma, Gamma." Friday. Yes. Yeah, he's taking after his aunt. I couldn't tell you. He said to me, "Yeah, I'm Delta Kappa Pi, and he's that." So, I am totally impressed with my nephew. Yeah, he's extremely smart. I said somebody's got to follow my footsteps in this family. So, Japan. Yeah, Japan. It was interesting. She's an interesting character. So there are so many novels that are focused on so many different topics. But before I forget, Monday, someone you probably know, Charles Salzberg, will be here with Second Story
Oh.
Man.
Oh,
Yeah,
cool.
and yeah, he is cool. I met him a couple of times. On the 29th, I'm doing a show. To brag about myself, no, not really. My last book is called A Daughter's Promise, and it's about my mom's journey with Alzheimer's and what happens to someone and her voice. So myself, Marcia Casper Cook, and Irene Brodsky, we're going to talk about Alzheimer's caregiving and elder care abuse. And
Oh, wow.
Irene knows about, yeah, I know about that also. And my mom, I had her, and the promise was that I would never put her in a nursing home. And trust me, it was the hardest promise I ever had to make because I knew basically I was on my own for this one. But I'm not sorry that I did it. On the fourth,
Wow,
I
that's
got
tough.
cast. It was tough. And my caregiver's guide, I've got to call my publisher after the show, is going to come out, I hope, next week so that different people can have understand what a caregiver does for Alzheimer's, the stages, traumatic brain injury, and elder care abuse. And one of these days, I'll write the stories about what I saw when I went to visit 20 old nursing homes and the reason why. On the fourth, I've got Pastor Sam Oliver. And Sam Oliver and I decided that it's about time the world learned to talk about forgiveness, kindness, tolerance, and understanding. And that's our topic for the fourth. on the fence.
That's good.
Someone
that's
else,
a good topic.
Yeah, it's my whatever. Alex Gray will be here with Silent Games. On the 9th, we got John Lansing, the 4th gunman. He saw my review and then he asked for an interview. I was like, okay, I'll fit you in somewhere. Then we have the author of The Fix on the 11th. Then we have another caregiving book, One Petal at a Time. And she gave my book 4 stars, so I have to love her. And on the 18th, we have Alice and the Assassins. And on the 26th, someone you know, K.H. Howe, Skyjack.
Mm.
Kimberly's new book, yeah. She asked for the interview. I was like, I'm jumping up and down. And on the 23rd, The Russian Resurgence with Alan Topol. And on the 1st, I have to remind him, R.Z. Zinsky will be here with Yesterday's News. And I was like, this is so cool. What can I say? I never know who's going to ever. So where do you picture Jack Ryan Sr.? He's been president for a long time. Is it ever, they're ever going to change the fact that he's the president and get somebody else? I like
well, again,
him, though. And if you can ever get another girlfriend in there?
That's a... Jack Ryan Sr. is president, and you know, I guess that's up to the publishers and the estate. But again, these are not these mirror reality, so he may be president for a very long time because Jack Ryan is the quintessential Tom Clancy
yeah.
character, and it would be very difficult to see him go out to pasture. So who knows? Who knows what will happen in the future, certainly not in the next book that I'm writing. He's not, so.
Is Jack Jr. going to ever move up in status anymore? Is he going to move up higher?
Well, I think there has to be. That's a good question.
I think about time, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, it has to be answered slowly, I think. And Mike, I haven't read all of Mike's, Mike Madden's, summer books. He writes about Jack Ryan in the summer Tom Clancy Mike Madden releases, and so we'll see where he goes with this next one. I think it's called Line of Sight. I'm kind of excited to read that one, and so we'll see where Jack is there. And then, you know, I know where he's going in mine, in the one that I'm working on. It's called Oath of Office.
Oh, nice.
I think so we'll just see. I think there has to be growth in every book. Otherwise, they get they could get stagnant. And you have to even, you know, maybe not long-term growth because these books have been around a long time. And, you know, James Bond doesn't necessarily grow in every book. But at least you have to, they have to learn something new about themselves. And I think with Jack Jr.'s age, that is a little, there's a little wider palette to you know, to choose from, where he can learn some things about himself, maybe learn to follow orders, settle down, you know. He's his parents' son, and so I like to think that he's going to end up closer to like his dad and mother, you know. So we'll just see where he goes.
Be funny if he takes on president of the United States, but in a different vein, from a younger point of
yeah,
view.
Yeah, who knows?
I know, with listening to the news today, and some people have their relatives in the cabinet. I don't think so. It's scary. So, is Jack Ryan Sr. going to ever have a love interest, or the love interest that he has?
No.
Is it going to happen? Because I know his wife died.
No, she's still alive. Jack Ryan Sr.'s
she's
wife
alive.
Is still
she's
alive.
Not, she's, not too,
yeah.
She's not too prominent in the books, though.
No, she's not very prominent. It depends on the book. She's been prominent in past books, but not in this one. She was off in another place. I think she might have a bit of a in the next book. I'm not sure. In the next Mike Madden book, I think I think on the Amazon snippet that I read about it, that she's got some part in it. So I'm excited to read that one. I like the.
I'm gonna look.
I think the.
I'm gonna look on
Jack Ryan
I'm
Senior,
look on,
Kathy Ryan. You know, you might be thinking because she was, she was badly hurt in a car wreck.
Yeah, that's why.
One of
yeah.
the early, in one of the early Clancy books, and then she really didn't have a bunch of big parts after that. So.
Well, I'm going to look him up. Does he publish with your publishing company?
Mike Madden?
What's it called? Purple Line? Yeah, Purple Line.
No, Line of Sight. Line of Sight.
Line of Sight.
Yeah, just look up. If you
up
just look up Tom Clancy. In fact, if you looked up Power and Empire, it would recommend it at the bottom. You know how Amazon does that.
Oh, I'm so good at this. I see yours. This is coming up with 100 stars. It says Mark Cameron, Time of Attack. I have to read one of your other books.
Oh yeah,
no,
please do.
They're recommending you, basically.
Well, usually if you look at Power and Empire or one of the other Clancy's, it'll show the next one in line. And Line of Sight, I can't remember what's on the cover. I think it's like RPG.
I'll find it.
Hit by Mike Madden. That will be the next one.
Well, that depends on who publishes it and who his publisher is.
It's the same publisher. It's the same publisher.
Well, so I can bother Elena for it then.
Yep.
I can bother Elena for it. She loves me. I'm not worried about that. Oh, good. That's. I will definitely do that later. But I have like 45 books inside to review. And some of them are really good and some of them are really interesting. I do have Brad Meltzer's book, Escape Artist. And I do have
good.
The new
like
Alex Berenson book, The Deceivers. They sent me that also. There are one or two that, unfortunately, I didn't get. I'm waiting for the Baldacci book to come because I'm on the list.
Mm-hmm.
So before we end, are you going to bring Kelly back, I hope?
Callahan?
Kelsey Callahan. Yeah, going to bring her back?
You know, at some point she's still out there, and who knows? It's a big world out there with a lot of moving parts in the law enforcement and intelligence community. And that's really another backhanded compliment, if you will, that an author can get is, you know, whatever happened to so-and-so, I'm interested in so-and-so. And that's good. We ought to be interested. We ought to write character. And she was not a minor character. She was a major character in this book.
Yeah.
But I want people to wonder about the Coast Guard pilots and what they're up to. And, you know, what Kelsey Callahan's up to. And if you write, and of course, the book would be 5,000 pages long if you did character sketches on everybody. But to the extent you can, you want everybody to be interested, you know, interesting. So I'm glad you want to hear more from her. We'll see. We'll just see.
Well, that was the other question. You know, I'm so glad you don't do this. A lot of authors are writing, first it's Marvin, then it's Tom, then it's Marvin, then it's Tom, and it's different characters. And at times I say, like, oh, my God. So when you write the book, or a Tom Clancy book, do you write out the plot line first and then put the characters in where you think they would fit and how they would react to different situations, or do you just write?
Well, I try to, when I, my general process for the Clancy books or the Jericho Quinn books or any of my own books, I write probably a whole notebook full of free writing where I just write, you know, and the writing might be no punctuation, just the way I think. So it might even say, what about this, or consider this, or, you know, just really free write out a bunch of different ideas. But I almost always, I there's probably a time that I haven't out of 17 or 18 books, but I almost always think what the bad guy's goal is, what's their plot, what's the thing that the good guys are trying to foil or discover or whatever. And then once I have that figured out, and in doing that, I generally have a bad guy in mind, you know, what the what the number one villain and the number two villain and the villain's helpers, and maybe there's two separate sets of bad guys and not so bad guys. And once I flesh that out, then I'll take the characters and on the good guy side, the protagonist side, and flesh them out and them on a collision course and write out the synopsis of where do the bad guys and the good guys intersect, and is this going to be a false climax where it's not really, you think it's over, you think they're going to win and they really don't. And, you know, I mean, that's kind of the formula for a good novel, a good thriller novel anyway. You throw problem after problem at your protagonist, and then you think they're going to win, and you think they've got the codes to the launch site or whatever, and then all of a sudden they're the wrong codes, and then they got to do a little bit more. And you know, that's why I think often when I get to the 50 pages from the end of a book and it looks like it's going to end, I think, he's going to pull a fast one on me, or she's going to pull a fast one on me. This is not what we think it is. And then sure enough, it's not. And then, you know, that's what makes it fun. Pulling little fast ones on the reader.
That's great. I'm going to have to tag you for a panel show, though. I've been thinking too much. They say I think too much. There were several authors like John Land and Andrew Gross, who I've had the pleasure of having on my radio show, that use fiction and historical fiction to bring the past to the present. But you use actual, you know, real life events. So I might do a show on how do you use, you know, what's happening in the news and bring it into the present in your novels, because I think a lot of people need to know how to do that the right way.
Sure.
So
that's fun.
I might target that for the end of May or June. The only author I can't seem to get, because I don't think anyone's ever gotten, James Patterson. So I'm going to interview.
He's busy.
Yeah, Nancy Allen, who wrote A Wolf in the Woods on sex trafficking, believe it or not. And her book was
cool.
Interesting, and her next one is with James Patterson. So she better send that one to me, because I'm going to be really upset because I want it. So before we end, where can we learn more about you and your work? And this has been fun, let me tell you. And I'm going to email Elena right now.
No, thanks. Yeah, just I have a website, Mark Cameron Books. Just markcameronbooks.com. I should be more active on social media. I mean, I have a Mark Cameron author Facebook page. I don't have Twitter or Instagram. I should, but I'm a fairly boring person. If I'm not writing, then I'm riding my motorcycle or sailing or doing quiet things and driving around the country or traveling with my wife. They'll have my bios on it and on the Mark Cameron Books site. And really, the best way to learn about me is to read. I don't make a lot of political commentary or anything like that. My thoughts are wrapped
Neither
up in
I.
the characters. Thoughts are wrapped up in the characters I write about.
Well, I am so excited. And what happened was I found your website, and I'm saying, okay, I'm going to ask him myself. I'm going to brave this. This is just me. Whatever. I do this all the time. And I think the very first author I did that with, and somebody dared me to do it, and it turned out to be, when I first started to do radio, I was on another network, and I had to have an assistant, which made it kind of hard, because my assistant asked some questions that upset one of the major New York Times authors, and I won't say who. And I'm saying, okay, that's, you know, like, not my fault, and I, you know, muted my assistant because I didn't want the person to get upset. Yeah. So, but seriously, you know, you never know how people are gonna react to something ever. So, yeah, what can I say?
That's true.
But I'm gonna send you the link, and I interviewed the first person I ever asked to interview was Tess Gerrinson.
Oh, really? She's brilliant.
She's a doll. Not only that, but, you know, I walked into the Thriller Fest, what was it, last year or the year before, and she actually walked up to me. She says, okay, we have to get a show going. This is what I want. It's like, you know who I am? Oh, yeah, I'm wearing my name. I was, like, so excited because I've met, you know, Robert Dugoni, and I've read Andrew Gross.
Great,
I just walk
I
up to
Robert.
People.
Yeah.
Robert is great, and I got an email from J.A. Chance the other day. She wants me to review her new book coming out. And, you know, ever so often you get lucky, and I said, I'm going to try Mark Cameron. What can happen?
I'm glad
I did. I didn't realize you were in Alaska. My nephew went there, too. He said he loved it.
It's great.
Yeah, he and his girlfriend like to go all over the place. It's great. He's amazing. And you know what's really amazing is he's hearing impaired.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's got a hard time because there's a movie theater, the Regal Theaters, and they give you these glasses to watch. He said that the closed captioning on like 15 of them didn't work. He's got more free passes and everything. They need to address that, yeah. So I want to thank you a million times. I hope I get a copy of your new one before. When is it coming out, the next one?
In November. It'll be a year from when Power and Empire came out. So.
Okay, November's good. That's a good time. I'll remember. I forget nothing. My husband hates that. But, yeah. So hopefully Elena will send me a pre-release copy so we can set up another interview now that I know that you're ahead of me. So I don't have to worry about saying 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the morning. It's okay.
I
did an interview with somebody from Japan. I got up at 7. To be able to do the interview because it's 13 hours away and I'm going like, oh my God,
yeah.
It's like 8 o'clock. Yeah.
Yep.
So thank you so much. I'm going to send the link
thank
to you.
You
right now. You're welcome. Have a great day and thank you so much. And I really wish it would stop snowing, but it's not. Oh, well.
Spring is here. Stay warm. Thanks, friend.
Have a great day. Thank you. Bye.
Hey, you too. Bye-bye.